So it prevents you stress. One of the good things you can do with your mirror neurons. Thank you.
If you've had a stressful moment, one of the good things you can do is look into the faces of people who care about you. You get that resonance because our human connections are very powerful. We underestimate them. We underutilize them. Just explain the sheer breadth of our unemployment problem. We're not employing all these resources. Let that. I don't need it if I'm not getting around. And just, I'll let it rest. So, yeah, and I'll pull it up in a second, but I'm kind of better standing at the moment. So, thank you for all coming out. I appreciate it. I know everyone has their reasons for their interest in this, and they're just as diverse as, you know, I'm sorry, there's probably 7 billion different reasons anything ever happens, but I thank you for showing up. A couple of remarks before I dive in. So my father was an associate of Martin. They worked together in the South at this time. And I just every now and then I Google, because as time goes on, people begin to store parts of the experience on the internet. It begins to not just gather current events, but it gathers some of the past to the extent that it's available, and people kind of want to record their legacy, their memories. They want to move their stuff into this new world. And so periodically I Google to see if my dad's story, just how it's been growing, and I found really interesting things over the time. One of the recent things I found was that there are a lot of phones. So Martin was under surveillance continuously once he became a focal figure and not necessarily promoting the mainstream vision for the country. So he became a focus for the FBI, and these public records were released at some point recently, and I found a phone log of Martin in the 1960s, and that phone log was my dad's name. It was really cool. I said, go ahead, Dad. You know, that was nice. So it makes things feel a little close. Now, I didn't actually meet Martin personally. I was 7 at the time all this stuff was happening in Lebanon, and I heard conversations, and in our home and in our church, there were always Freedom Riders with their sleeping bags and gear coming through, so there was always a flow in my house of these interesting people. And I didn't fully appreciate what's going on, but there were college students, actors from Hollywood. Sam Cooke was in the house once. Sam Cooke was in my house, and I stood and watched my mother look at him in a way that made me go, Dad is not chopped liver, Mom. You know? Dad, he's better than Sam. I mean, I didn't even know Sam Cooke. I mean, he's a singer, and he's cute, but hey. You know, but I just watched the other one. Maybe it was kind of fun to watch this dream of this swath of engaged people, and they were all types in all ages. And one of my interests in science, you know, was a nerd, and one of the guys was a chemist. And one of the guys, a college student, came and spent time with me and with my chemistry set, and we did experiments. So one guy fixed my bicycle. You know, it was just quite a time. And the feelings are kind of profound. But they would live, and then they would go. They would organize, and my dad would. This is what happened in the movement, and this was typical. Whether Martin led it or whomever, they would plan the activities that they were going to do. If we were going to go demonstrate some, not we, because at that age my parents didn't actually have me marching, even though I was at the school, which is a different exposure, but it wasn't the same as out there with the dogs and the hoses and what have you. But they would explain how you protect yourself. How do you stand in the face of some of our most negative emotions and hold within you our most positive emotions? How do you do that? Because that's the challenge that we're faced with today. And that's not simply Martin's legacy. That's the legacy of Gandhi, the legacy of Jesus, legacy of any number of known and unknown people. You probably have family members who have demonstrated that same capacity to be one half of a bridge and leave it standing no matter what until the other half of that bridge finds a way to close that space. And so we've all seen it. So they would do this discussion. They would train, here's how you protect yourself. If you're experiencing, how do you protect your head? How do you do all that stuff? And it was just kind of interesting to watch that. And then they would always leave by singing, "We Shall Overcome." And I would like, when we leave today, it would be a nice way to leave as well. Now, the way I'm approaching this, Martin, when we lost Martin, was 39. 39 years old. So by my current age, he would be a young man, a young fella. Young fella. A lot of promise, I would think. You know, showing a lot of... And I decided that I would approach this as my 63-year-old self, kind of in a mentor relationship with this young guy, given the benefit of my technology experience, which is where I'm steeped in. We're having a conversation, and I'm talking to this guy who's trying to do things, and I'm going to suggest how we might use today's tools with his spiritual gifts. I'm going to say gifts. It's an interesting word because I want to say technology, because one of the arguments that I make is the things that we often call spiritual are not some endowment that drops on us or just rises up in us, but it's something that we can cultivate in the same way we cultivate knowledge. We cultivate a field of information that lets us go to the moon. We cultivate it with intention and deliberateness. But we don't do the same thing with the internal stuff, because for some reason that internal stuff is held as what you see. I'm sorry, what you get is what you will have, and it's not a space that we regard as a context for cultivation. I mean, with the same intensity and commitment that we cultivate money, for instance, or athleticism. We build physical force and capacity. But then we don't put in the same space with the same commitment cultivating these other human expressions that, in my view, have enormous survivability value. I mean, if you want to talk about sustainable life, if we build in that space, those assets, our survivability goes up. And I'm sorry, it exceeds any other strategy for surviving, including the best weapons. So we make the best weapons, the best hearts, who wins? I guarantee that these guys will be here for a long time because they will solve their problems. These guys will take themselves out. But we place our faith in the space of more power as opposed to placing our faith in the space of these other less tangible, maybe it's more efficient to blow your enemy up than to acknowledge that they're your brother and then have to work through the issues. Maybe it's a complex question, and sociologists and anthropologists could give us a much clearer historical progression that would explain how we arrived where we are. But it doesn't matter how we arrive where we are. I think the biggest question is always, what do we do now going forward? It's always, you can always take today as day one. You can always call it, that's called the reboot. For technical people, you go turn it off and turn it on again and pretend everything is okay and let's see what happens, you know? And we can always do that, and I think we are challenged to do that now. So I did a ton of preparation, but it was a dynamic process because my conversation would just go all over the place. But let's see how it goes this iteration. So I talked about now. I actually referred to these. So I'm going to do two things. I have a number of quotes that I have identified as being appropriate and relevant at this time. So I selected from all, because Martin talked a lot. And even though at 39 he stopped talking, he said a lot. So I had a lot to choose from. I selected things that I think are pertinent now. And I, in places, imagined what he might say if posed with a certain question so that I could say, here's my take, my interpretation on how. So I take some liberties, but I will say this part, this is Martin's own words. And then others, I go, I think I heard him say. And that way we can you know, at least be clear on and respect and honor his words and then the things that I imagine. At least we'll know where to place those. But they are inspired by Martin nevertheless. So I call the parts that I'm making up, particularly with respect to the technology side, I call them hard musings. Musings are, you know, it seems lightweight, right? Musings are like amorphous. You muse and then it goes. Unless you're a poet, in which it's your product, and you don't just muse and let it go. You go, if I'm going to eat, I write that musing down. That's a different story. But I call them hard musings. And actually, every morning I wake up preoccupied with this time that we're involved in. And this morning's preoccupation, when I woke up, and I'm learning to honor this, as I've at this point dedicated my life, my dad, the apple never falls too far from the tree, they said. I think that this apple is actually still on the tree. And I'm having a hard time separating myself, so I'm kind of walking around with my dad in my mind all the time now. And so at this point, my IT business has gone from working on things that my clients want me to do to applying my IT experience to things that I want to do. And I decided at 63, if I'm not thinking about legacy, I'm actually not really with it. I'm missing it. And I'm going to tell all of you, I have two things. That one of them is, they don't tell you in biology class that there's a second puberty. The second puberty happens when you get in your 60s. And outside of your control, it's not your fault. You are compelled to tell people what's on your mind, whether they want to hear it or not. You don't ask them, do you want to hear this? You just start dumping it on people. And that's nature's way of guaranteeing that the benefit of your experience goes on. And it's not your choice any more than the hormones are your choice to guarantee the furthering of life. So some of you are in your second puberty. You find that people don't, you know. But it's nature's wisdom to make sure you release and give back all your little dandelion thingies that you can flow in, you know. So I'm experiencing that. Okay. So have this file. I woke up and what should I be thinking? So this morning was about imagination. Imagination is the liberty closest at hand. We know necessity is the mother of invention. Well, the paternity test positively confirmed imagination as its father. And invention answers prayer most faithfully of all of the spirits. And when I say spirits, those of you who read The Bicameral Mind, I'm trying to remember the writer. Thank you. And he talks about his imagination of how consciousness functioned well before the way we've objectified it today. And so these things that occur in your consciousness would have been thought of as spirits. And of those spirits, imagination is the one that answers prayer most faithfully in my view. So that's my aboriginal sense. Anyway, so necessity, though, we feel, and we feel it as need. However, imagination, we feel as hope. Necessity is need and imagination is hope. And still lives comfortably in the vestiges of our bicameral mind, blasting music loudly. I don't know why I had to add that little part. But in our imagination, we are, and it always serves. And so one of the things that I am, these things that I'm talking to this young fellow Martin about is to take full advantage of the technology that exists today. There's no reason that this most treasured part of us gets less resources than the Department of Defense. It shouldn't get less. It's more important. And we have to see to that. And so part of our own activities are to evaluate our expenditures of our value, our money, and place those wisely. And just as sure as when Kennedy said, we will go to the moon in the next decade. Remember he said that? 500,000 engineers made that magic. Never happened before, and then we did it. Just because we said we were going to do it, and we did it expressing this enormous capacity that we have. And then when there's a problem in our society, we get a bunch of cardboard and run around the streets and make a lot of noise. Hey, I think there's a disparity between how we're approaching these problems. I want all of it. I want the same geniuses or the same level of geniuses working on this issue with the same fervor that we use to get to the moon. Then we have a future. And then we truly see what human beings look like when they grow up. Because I don't think we, by and large, truly grow up. And if you talk to the Eastern people about, and you look at what meditation does, if you really hold to the practice, you find out that the centered and the balance, the emotional resilience, the capacity to kind of weather life and remain fully present, that resiliency is practiced, is taught, it's a capacity. And I think when you can do that through all the emotional extremes that we're capable of, then you're an adult. Then you can, again, hold your side of the bridge, across it, the whole distance, and not go, it's not fair. It's not fair they're not coming part the way to me. It's not fair. I'm sorry, we go down screaming, it's not fair. We're not grown-ups, so I think these things we do need to focus on. So I call these, this is about the hard musing. So I start with a couple of quotes. And unfortunately, because of the way this morning started out, there was a sorting process, but I think I'll recover quickly enough. So I kind of asked Martin, in a summation story, what is it that you really want? If you said, what was your life about? What were you trying to do? What did you want? I picked a quote. We must come to see that the end we seek is a society at peace with itself. A society that can live with its conscience. Now, when I said society, what did you envision?
Government.
Government. People. California? United States? Anybody think the world?
No.
Somebody thought the world? Thank you. I think that, and I'm going to say, Martin, so elaborate then. This is for the world person, so my second quote. If we are to have peace on earth, our loyalties must become ecumenical rather than sectional. Ecumenical is the wholeness, all of the, in the church context, we would be saying all of the churches, but I think we should say all of the people. But I'll continue because I didn't want to interrupt Martin. So if we're to have peace on earth, our loyalties must become ecumenical rather than sectional. Our loyalties must transcend our race, our tribe, our class, our nation. And this means we must develop a world perspective. Every nation must now develop an overriding loyalty to mankind as a whole in order to preserve the best in their individual societies. You don't hear this all the time in the speeches they take, but he wasn't just talking about, let's get the black folks happier, please. How about that? No. It's a bigger concern, a bigger speaking for humanity, not for a subgroup. Though his birth placed in there, his life mission, if you say, what's your big picture? It's about the planet. It's all of us. And I think that's important. And so if I were talking to Martin, I think it's very interesting. A couple things I would suggest is that the same strategies that we would apply in a social justice movement transfer to the larger context. And one of the opportunities of today in the technological sphere is that one of you could have a big aha, produce a little thing, and it can go around the world before we get out of here today. Could go around the world. Everyone could go aha with you if it had that kind of impact. So, Gaia, which is another word for this whole body with all of us cells and organs and as part of it, could have this big aha experience based on our current technology. So I think we're at a watershed moment in our species existence where we can actually see what this arc is going to. You know, I think we have to learn to accept the morphing identification of what humanity is all about. Because I think, again, if you look at a child, those first couple years, the child's whole world and its entire existence is defined in a certain way, but as each passage is encountered, that's redefined. And I think we are similarly, as a collective, as a species, are going to end up redefining ourselves again and again. And sometimes it's hard to let go. But I think that's one of the things that the technology is a reflection of, that we together have found a way to have an emerging collective consciousness. It's not woo-woo and magical, it's real. And we need to use that. So my thoughts, just to kind of to give, now Martin is a smart guy, so he's the guy who in Birmingham, when there was an issue, one of the strategies was to boycott. And what a boycott meant was, you understand that your adversary, I hate to say adversary, but we're having difficulty with this particular organization. Now, one thing we can try to do is talk nice, and we did a lot of that. But the other thing that I think we need to do, if we are serious, is we must be prepared to get beyond talking and go, you didn't hear me, did you? And then kind of compel a little bit. So power, I'm really talking about power, and I'm not afraid of power. It's part of your birthright to have it. And to exercise it. I'm not separating it from morality. I'm not doing that. But I'm saying it's your birthright to have power. Now, in the movement, we don't talk about the power very much. We think demonstrating is good enough. Maybe some think that. I don't think so. And I think Birmingham was an example of the willingness to go beyond simply protesting and hoping your protesting penetrate to the heart and make a difference. Sometimes you have to go, but we are not here if you just roll over. And when they decided to exercise that economic power, want to realize they have it and exercise it, then it made a difference. And I think that we have to be prepared to ask the question, what is our current best vision for constructing an economic power that expresses us? That expresses us. And so if Birmingham, they could use the boycott to compel the company to at least come to the table and talk. I think those of us who are concerned about the planet, for instance, could use economic power and understand, for example, the energy industry, and to go beyond asking them to not kill us, to say, we will strangle your business. Without us buying your fuel, you don't have a business. We're trying to tell you what energy we want. If you don't listen to us about what energy we want, we'll get someone else to make that energy that we want. But if we don't do that, we are not being activists. I mean, what does it mean to be an activist? I don't know, actually, because I know a lot of people, activism is the demonstrating and the communicating and the having a voice and being a voice. But I think a voice is just a piece of the solution. And economic strategy is another piece. So for Martin's legacy, I think we take the Birmingham example and go global. And say, if 50 million of us decide there will not be a pipeline through the middle of this country, we won't just stand on a hill and say it. We're going to organize and put our purses where our mouth is and say no in terms that are understood. And terms that are understood means this thing you treasure more than all, I will deny, I'll withhold it from you because you are misrepresenting me. And I believe that about taxes too. I would say, Martin, and I'm going to expand this. We pay taxes, and we send those taxes to Washington. We hope that they're representing us and our intention and desires. Right now, I'm not convinced that the dollars that we're paying is representing us. In fact, I'm paying to be abused in certain places in certain ways. So I want the smartest accountants to build me a website that I can take my profile to, and they tell me what legitimate deductions I can make in directions touring charities that I care about. So my money does what I want. And I'm legitimate. I'm clean. I'm not in jeopardy with the IRS. But I want my money to go where I want it to go. And it just galls me that we, maybe about 50% of the country, roughly speaking, are going to fund insanity. And I'm thinking, let's be strategic. Let's just, back to imagination. We're not being really imaginative here. We're kind of stuck and upset. But we just have to flare out with some creativity. I mean, just, you know, in World War II, we had the secret project, and I hate the result because we made this weapon that should never have come into existence. But it's actually more the response. The Los Alamos response is change the game. That's brain power. So if anything we need to bring to our social justice activities, we cannot be outthought. We cannot be outthought. And if we're not managing our money, we're being a little lazy. And maybe it's a token effort after all. Maybe we don't want the world to change, and some of us are going to be reasonably comfortable no matter how it goes. And if that's okay, there's not negativity in that, because the way we're constructed is the way we're constructed. And I have to, my view is that your life is your mold. It shapes you. And you may be responsible for whether you hold that shape once you learn how to change it, but that initial shape is not your fault. Babies come here, tabula rasa is maybe extreme, but they come here innocent. They don't come with an agenda. I don't like transfer payments. No. That's not, they come here innocent, and then their mold, their shape, all the programming shapes them. So I'm not blaming anyone for their view, but I do believe that as we learn, if we hold it, then you can be culpable. You can say, but you knew better. By the time you were 60, you did know better. So what was going on? And then those are deeper questions, and I'm not going into the deep. The mystery will remain mystery. When you leave here, you probably have as much mystery as you had when you came here. And that's okay. I'm good with the mystery. So the second thing that I would say to Martin, though, is at this time, I would focus on truly understanding the influence and the opportunity that the Internet represents. I would be engaging in understanding the economic pressure points internationally as well as nationally, and understanding how we would apply our numbers, our social, our collective commitments amongst ourselves, and apply those as intelligently as we can, so that any time we need to, there is a place where we have a, I'm going to go there. We should have an alternate apparatus for governing. This alternate apparatus for governing we can create. And the reason we use Washington is not because that's the only way. It was convenient in 1776. You couldn't have all whatever number of millions of people of us get together in a room and figure things out. So representation was an accommodation to these real complications. Representation was necessary. So you had to pick a person to go, you speak for us, okay? Us 20,000 here in Virginia speak for us. And we have a representative system, not because that's the necessary way down from heaven. That's what we could do to solve the problem. But I think today we have other options. And we need to be able to have people on a day-by-day basis be engaged in what's happening in the world and not have to wait 4 years for a correction. And one way to do that is for us to learn that it is a we. We have to create some sort of we. And we have to make that visible. And then we can use that instrument, because now we've got another set of geniuses who understand the panel of choices. And then we can engage that as you choose. You vote daily on something. Vote for this or vote against that. Vote with your dollars. Vote with your voice. Vote with your mentoring. Vote with your participation in organizations. Vote with whatever capacities you have. And this technology enables us to do things that are unimaginable right now because we're practicing thinking about this. But as we practice this well enough, we're going to do things that will kind of make the old government model obsolete. It's going to go away because it wasn't necessary, or rather it becomes less necessary as we can accomplish our agreements about collective action. As we accomplish our agreements more fluidly, we will go that way. It's an incredible encumbrance to sit and have to wait a long time before you can go, oh, we can't fix that until the next election cycle while something terrible is happening. It's like not being able to get medication until sometime in the future while the disease process is just moving along similarly. So I think that's a correction. Now, I'm going to talk about education for a minute, and I have a quote. So Martin says, and I'm kind of being a little extreme now, and a response is, so the question is not whether we will be extremists, because I'm talking about some extreme stuff. It's not about whether. So the question is not whether we'll be extremists, but what kind of extremists will we be? The nation and the world are in dire need of creative extremists. So I'm just suggesting that even though we have a legacy of how we express social justice in the 60s, don't go back to that. Let's ask the question. Ask the question again. So today, how do we do this? I think one of the things we have to do, so Martin, somehow, Martin, you have these gifts. You have equanimity. You have practiced, you have trained, born that way, I'm not sure, but this love thing, not everybody can just step out and do that. I want them to be able to do that. We want them to, but not everyone can just step up and go, because once somebody hits you, you're like, hey, nonviolence, you can do that. I'm going to knock the next person out who touches me, you know. Stuff is in us. And so now if you're not prepared for that stand, don't go out there because you're not going to do it right. When we decide to put young men in battle, we don't just grab them out of high school and go, run out there, grab one of those and run out there. You say, what is that person going to face? And how do I prepare them? I think that we have to ask ourselves, what is the preparation necessary for someone who really wants to fully and deeply engage in social justice activism, and particularly engage with the dysfunctional brother or sister? And I'm using that language deliberately because I'm holding the stance that when we are born, we are in a committed relationship with every other human being. A committed relationship with every other human being. That's what love is in the form that Jesus, Martin, Gandhi were holding it. Which is to say you have the capacity to hold the compassion until they grow up over there. Or to assist them. And to assist them with honey, not with vinegar. Because they will resist. No one, all of us have the internal sovereignty to go, don't treat me like that. I don't care who you are, and you can be right. Don't treat me like that. That's going to happen. So how do you hold and take that stance? Well, I've been studying meditation. Some of us are experienced in meditation. But meditation is a technology. It's not a thought. It's not a thought process. It's a human capacity, or rather it's a means to develop a human capacity. And as such, it's a part of you as a human being. It's in your toolkit. It's your birthright to be able to stand through your life experiences with balance and equanimity, with the capacity to remain outside of your fight-flight system while addressing a situation. And if we don't prepare people who are going to be engaged in this to endure the difficulties, we're not training our soldiers. I don't like that metaphor. So, but the point is, we prepare people. So, some recent, there's a guy named Alan Wallace. I just read a book recently about attention. But he used this book about attention to talk about one of the disciplines where we do learn to manage and maintain, sustain, and in fact, to elaborate on what attention really means, and so we can master attention. Well, in that, he suggests that under ideal conditions, a person could reach Satori in 3 to 6 months. It's not a lifetime thing. So you could call that a boot camp experience. And you support a person who's willing to go out there and fight this fight. You support them for the time it takes to be prepared to make the best effort. So my motto, best effort, if we're making best effort, you go the distance. You don't go to the moon on, eh. You don't. Those spectacular achievements are best effort achievements, and we have to go the distance. So that means that these disciplines that tell us how to create these types of internals so that we can be effective, we have to make that a normal activity. We treat meditation as optional. And so we all decide that, I'm going to stay in my adolescence. I think I like that. I like high school. This advanced degree business, too much. I'm tired. It's just, there's something about the American culture where we don't really, really want to tackle the challenge of becoming this sort of, you would look at them and go, wow, that guy or that girl, whatever. There are people who, when you see them, you recognize some extraordinary capacities, and then we go, but that's not me. So why do we sell out? Why do we opt for the easy when, in fact, the payoffs from self-mastery are enormous? They are enormous. Just to shock you for a minute. So there's a guy named Milton Erickson who was a famous... How many of you know the name Milton Erickson? Famous clinical psychologist. He was the Albert Einstein of clinical hypnosis. And oftentimes in the hypnotic process, the benefits that you get from that are commensurate with the amount of subjective time you apply to it. So if you're rehearsing some situation and learning how to respond to it without anxiety, you repeat that experience, and at some point your anxiety levels through that practice, you begin to manage it. At some point now you can have an experience without the anxiety because you've had the time for your system to make those adaptations. And so time is a factor. His question was, how significant is that subjective time and how flexible is it? So he did an experiment. And he had some subjects, put them in a pretty profound trance for them to do this, had a clock with the, no, it was a ticking clock if I recall, like a metronome, and he performed, he used suggestions to create the experience of that clock slowing down. And the word for that is time distortion. And he was able to consistently distort a person's subjective experience of time by about a factor of 60. That's pretty dramatic. 60. But the kicker is, when that person is asked to perform a task in that altered state of time, let's say you're an architect or a mathematician, someone who does cognitive work, you're given a cognitive task and you perform that in that subjective time, the product is commensurate with your subjective time and not clock time. So we're talking about human capital and creating human value. We have an opportunity on the table to learn how to magnify or multiply our capacity to produce. So talk about our current age of creating software, for instance, and the problems of creating software. But if you had a company, Milton, come over here and train my people, because I'm going to kick my productivity up by a factor 60. Not only my productivity, one of the people in that experiment was an actor, a performer, who was an understudy in a performance, and the principal got sick, and they had to get on top of that role that night, and they took the skill they learned in the experiment and applied it to practice and kicked out the performance the next day. Whoa, learning? So we have a society now where a lot of people, the society has failed them. And they have gone through the 12 years empty-handed. And now we're pushing them to do something, and they don't know how to do anything. And the world is even more becoming more difficult for you to survive with labor. So our challenge is to learn like we never have. To learn like we never have. And so in my, and I call my group now that I am going to fund for Martin, it's not NASA, but NESA. So I just changed the word A to E for education. Right? And we'll have a panel of geniuses whose job it is to optimize the teaching process so that we can take a person in and prepare them for social justice stresses, teach them the communication skills and the centeredness and equanimity, or people who want to perform, because we're going to have websites and things, so we've got to provide technology so we can really, a couple of things. We'll take inventory of all those organizations so that we can create an effective organization of organizations. If you're doing something good, you can register, put a profile out there. We know what you're doing, what your needs are, what you've done, what you're going to do. Put it on the map, and everybody knows to go there. We need a lot of software, so I'm going to have this team crank stuff out. We also need people who produce scenarios, and we're going through evaluation of what kind of strategy we can create scenarios and do that sort of thing. We need to have a clearinghouse for needs and contributors, right? We need to have there's a number of things. There was one other key piece that this technology can produce, and it'll come back to me. So here's what I'm going to go to a keyword. So another time for another quote, because I'm silencing Martin a little bit too much. So the church must be, now this is important, the church must be reminded that it is not the master or servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state and never its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. So when machines and computers, profit motives, and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered. So, but the challenge and the reason for this discussion about education is one other thing Martin said. And this is a point of consternation. And I'll be reading in today's service his letter from the Birmingham jail, and it also relates to this, but a different aspect. Rarely do we find men who willingly engage in hard, solid thinking. There is an almost universal quest for easy answers and half-baked solutions. Nothing pains some people more than having to think. Anybody believe that today? Okay. But if that's an issue, don't fuss about it. Create resources. Make it easy. My strategy, and I'm good at, you know, blue sky, far field things because I kind of like sci-fi, so sometimes it seems extreme, but at this point, looking at the world and the things we're doing, nothing's extreme, not really. We do anything we want to. You know, I could see my mother's face right now if I wanted to. Live. I mean, she's in Nashville, Tennessee. Wow, I could do that. I mean, nothing. So given that, I'm back to the technology. So I think we need to commit to this global model of church, this ecumenical model. I think church is the proper representative for conscience. For moral, but we need to talk about moral force. We need to enable the church to not just sing songs and feel good. We need to make it a power. A church needs to be able to be a power. Because there are folks who really are not going to respond to your, though correct, expressions of right and wrong. They can be correct, and we can still nuke the planet. We can be correct, and we can still foul the water. We can be correct, and those things can happen. So if we don't, now I'm still saying, I believe that our best strategy is to be prepared to go to the max with the strategy of love and teaching. So if I were a doctor and the dysfunctional component of our society were my patient, I would not wait to like them to treat them. That would not be a good doctor. So I've got to be prepared to treat them, to care about them, despite their dysfunctionality. In the meantime, though, if I have to block something, I should have the power to go, I'm just going to put a hold on this while we work out this other thing, while we kind of help come to some unification, you know, let's clarify our understanding of what's going on. But in the meantime, I just need to put a hold to this because I have children. I trust you ladies who have children to be the answer, but that's a different conversation. So, right. So in doing that, a possible model is Mac Lingo is a meditator, among other things. He's a meditator and he's a social activist, and he goes to the San Quentin and he spends time with people. There's a lot in that skill set that's already in place, so he would be my candidate. I say, Mac, your job is this. First of all, I'm going to put you through this training so that I can magnify your conjugate product. I want you to be super efficient. Mac, I'm talking about you. He was out for a second. So just so you know, you're my exemplar for like the type of person I would groom as a model. And then I'm going to talk to some mathematicians after that. So the thing is, I would pair Mac up with a person. That person doesn't have to be employed. Why? Because I'm going to work with Mac, who's an engineer, and I'm going to give him more subjective time so he can be more productive. He can make more money than he'll need to live. At that point, I can buddy him with somebody who Mac will support while he teaches. When Mac is done, that person will be an educated, balanced, capable human being who can now do the same. So each person buddies to make one, right? Your job, but the economics are this. You have to be more productive in order for this to work. But I look to Erickson's work to say, you can be more productive. So, let's let you crank out more consulting projects, more software or something. You now get somebody ready, and then that person, similarly now, capably productive, can do that again. And so we have a model. Each person, so each stage of this progression doubles the number of adults. I'm going to use that language provocatively, adults. So then you go, how many cycles does it take for us to make a billion of these adults? If you know exponential, yes?
Like a good pyramid scheme.
Yes. You got it. And it, in fact, does produce more value. But the idea is, it's actually not that hard to do. We could do it. And it actually would work in reasonable and acceptable time. I hate people go, you know, it's going to be a whole generation or two before we see this problem go away. Well, if I look backwards, we've been saying that for how many generations?
Yeah.
So that's not the answer. And if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same result. So I'm like, let that go. Let's think. Let's look like we understand what 2017 offers us, and let's use it. All right? So education becomes part of strategy one. Part of it is also, since we can produce, is to produce a body dedicated to quality information. If I want to know truth, I, as the church, might want to own an organization within the church body that says, if you're concerned about truth, we don't have just spiritual conversation, we have secular truth. So I can help you sort through the misinformation, which is a big problem. One of our jobs is to give somebody a clear window to look through. And then we can provide them with a panel of contribution, charity places. If you're the church and you want to give, we should assist people in doing that. We should be master educators. So I'm all of a sudden putting so many things in the church's bag. But my model is this. When my father got fired again and again in the South for being a Presbyterian civil rights worker, that was not a tenable thing for some reason. We ended up in Philadelphia where he was a missionary minister in what was called Ludlow, which was a slum community. It was one of the 10 worst slums in the country. And I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? This place looks like Dresden after, you know, carpet bombing. I mean, it's blown up. What? And what he did, though, was once he got there, he would walk around the community and get to know people. We have to do that. Gang wars were a big problem, and young men were killing each other in the streets. But he convinced the church that they needed to create facilities there for the community that created, that provided opportunities for young men to do other things, because they all want affiliation and they want meaningful activity. And if you don't provide a substitution, you can't say stop. You got to say do this. And so the church had in its function not only a sanctuary and choir and all that, it also had a center where there were pool tables, table tennis tables, basketball courts, little league teams for young boys, after-school tutoring, counseling, food cupboard, build all that into the church. Why? Because the church, unless it's relevant at the lower part of the Maslow pyramid, we don't get to the peak. And so put the bottom layers in, and then you get to the peak. And I don't know how much my dad thought about it. He was a psychology student and had started his doctorate work before he got called. So he was a serious student in psychology, and I used to pour through the books as a kid going, wow, because he had this cool stuff. But something happened as he was going to Vanderbilt to become the doctor. Something happened. So he went to Vanderbilt Divinity School, which was fine with me. But what happens is, given that experience and given his experience in the South, he understood that the church, to be relevant, to fit in this community, and do what it should do, which is bring good news, he had to add these other capabilities. And I'm suggesting that today the church now has a multifaceted need that it can fulfill. Informational, educational, economic, etc. And if it has to do with alternate power, I think we need to add that too, because right now it's the only organization, in my view, that has any shot at assembling a meta organization, so to speak, that can then truly address the issues we face going forward. So I'm hopeful, and the reason I joined this church, I'm hopeful that it's the right kind of church to do that. To talk to other churches and say, here's what we have in common. And we have a lot to offer. And when you have something to offer, you have the basis for a relationship that survives on value. And human beings, they will respond to the value. So let's just see now, having covered a lot of ground quickly, because there's a ton. I'm going to skip some of these remarks in the interest of time. There are remarks about, this one's probably worth mentioning. So good government. So I'm talking about an alternative to government. But I'm also talking about, essentially, it's instituting an alternate way for us to govern, to handle our resources and our collective interests and needs and influence. Because even things we don't do as an influence block, we can influence policymakers as well, and I think there's something to be said for that. So, good government is pooled strength. It ought to be the role. Oh, that's me. Sorry, Martin. putting words in Martin, you know, and he said great things. But can I have a time check real quick before? So I need to kind of give me a second. So I have I'm going to address other Martin quotes. I think in the question period, I do want to have that because I think it's very valuable given what I'm trying to do, that I understand beyond my subjective window, and I value the opportunity to hear what a group of bright thinking people have to say, and it informs me as well. So I do want to leave you with the opportunity to contribute and to say something. But I just have another poem occurred to me yesterday morning. So, and this is to you, and I'm not a poet. So when something like this happens, I go, "What? You're not a poet. You're a geek. What is this?" But I don't know what else to call it. So, not having a better name, I don't know anything about poetry. But it feels like that. So, and it starts: "You winter warriors and lovers have already weathered the range and gamut of trials, heart, mind, and spirit. You've had to stand, and you stood, and you know what it feels like. We need to also stand steadfastly in the way that we know how through this healing crisis of this time. The children will see you and learn, so stand, you winter people who have seen all seasons. I know of no other way than this, that the children will learn what they need to know. What you have become energizes and fertilizes the earth. That richness you gathered last year emerges into the actions of spring. Winter, you know, winter, spring stuff, so that's the reference. So some of us are winter warriors and lovers, and I use that intentionally because all strategies are not war. But some of us have warred and are still, and that's valued. But some of us are lovers, and we heal and help with the heart. But I just wanted to say at this time, those of you who have, you have more to give, and you teach more than you know, because you are being watched. Psychology shows us that whether you mean it, when people see you, they are not. They have a percentage of what they're doing is conscious, and much more is happening beneath consciousness. And that's where the greater learning happens. And so as you do what you do, people are learning. They are being educated. So I'm thanking you for being the resource that you are. I feel like I want to end up on one more good note from Martin. So I need to find one of my marks. Okay. When our days become dreary with low hovering clouds of despair, and when our nights become darker than a thousand midnights, let us remember that there is a creative force in this universe working to pull down the gigantic mountains of evil, a power that is able to make a way out of no way and transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows. I'll let Martin finish with that remark. Yes.
It's working?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whomever has the mic wins. So if you have to tackle her and grab it, do it. We're in playoff season. Go for it. Sorry, Barbara.
Thank you, Cordell. One of the concepts of Dr. King's that has been most meaningful to me over the years is the doing the work of creating the beloved community. And I wonder if you could say something about what you think Dr. King meant by that, but also relate it to what you're telling us about technology connecting the world.
Gotcha.
And alternate government.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. I'll try to be... So, Martin said, power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is sentimental and anemic. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice. And justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love. But to the technology piece... The word I would use is platform. Now, a platform becomes a software. Let me say, I'm going to call it a machine because the tooling is very complex, so it doesn't do to simply call it software. But the benefit of it is that it provides a collection of services that altogether enable you to do something amazing that you couldn't otherwise. Your computer has what's called an operating system, and it turns into a platform for amazing things. But you can store data. You can open up applications, all these things, and you communicate with it. So a platform that would further social justice, in my mind, would involve... One of the big things that we that always shocks me is that as a person working every day, I have no idea what's going on in the world, particularly in the, where it's about things I care about. I would love an inventory, a coast-to-coast, a global inventory of who's doing what and how it's going. I would love it. And... if I were one of those organizations, I would want to be on a platform, and I would have in my profile, here's what we're doing, here's where we're going, but here's what we need. And I'd want a resource in there, as I alluded to before, for those who wish to contribute. I would want to handle the legal issues for them so they understand their contribution benefits and rights and liabilities. So I provide and support that process. I would have on that platform the ability to do things from a one-minute thing. I just sent $100 to that. Or, I saw a guy requesting evaluation of his business plan. I have a free evening. I'm going to evaluate that and return it. Any number of things could be available so that you have a central point for us to do things that create value and create the kind of... that actually address some of the particular concerns and issues that we have. So these resources are broad and wide, but one of the great things about software is that we can multiply the ability to take one person's knowledge and have it leverage it. So there's something called expert systems, and I'm going to tweak this a bit, but I can make intelligent software that assists people in doing some of these things that require some expert knowledge. And to the extent that we make that stuff available, we can leverage a lot of folks who are not going to go to business school and are not going to go and create the type of human capital. When you create this know-how, that takes time. Takes effort. And even and if they tried, they still may not be the right person for it. But we can resource a lot of capable organizations with things that are missing. So to me, this platform becomes not only the opportunity to multiply capacity, but to coordinate that capacity. Birmingham was a coordination challenge. If we all agree not to ride the bus, then we have effect. If I don't, but you do, no effect. So now we have a tool that allows us to take millions of people and go, from Monday to Monday, we're going to send this message. All 100 million or whatever the number is. And when we do that, we're now talking about types. And that's just one example of control. So in the military, they call it command and control. But for us, we're just talking about a way to control, to kind of create the effect of collective power. Now, to the love issue, there are people, I'm going to go one more, there are a couple of websites I want to kind of send links to, but there are people who actually have a systematic way to talk about how you train yourself to be emotionally balanced, to create those reserves, and to own it so that you never freak yourself out, send your blood sugar up and then down again, and angst and stress, and your blood pressure's out of whack. You can actually learn to be, to express yourself as opposed to be buffeted by the, you know, the famous slings and arrows. So we can, we can use technology to actually produce tutorials, explanations, walkthroughs, and then human contact for guidance when needed to be. So we can make that a valuable resource and help people understand through videos, through stories, what it means and what its consequences are. We underestimate the impact of the amount of time we spend in front of the television and how that defines our society. To the extent that we make alternate windows to sit in from and be shaped by, we can change that path. We need to get on that, in that game of making alternate paths that, one, are more fun than what they're already getting, but holistic and valuable, generative, developmental. And we can do that, but it becomes a resource question. So, one, make a vision on the platform, make the vision. People know to go there. Show the vision. So here's where you go to participate. And feedback. Here's where we are today. Here's where we think we'll be next week. And make a trajectory so people have expectations about where we're going. It's all technology. So how we got to the moon. None of it is new. None of it is special. We're not asking for the Red Sea to part. No, this is doable. So we only need commitment and vision. They need a point person. So I get my friend who knows Obama. I say, Mr. Obama, we could really use a good point person. Somebody just who has a voice, who has presence, who has trust, who has executive experience. And I know, I understand you have some executive experience. Someone who could just help us take a facility that's got some great value and make it visible and communicate the opportunity that it represents. All of a sudden, you have an alternate way to manage trillions of dollars and to manage collective activity that's actually not by vote, at least not by six-year vote, but by the fact that the crowd can go, we like you. Or at some point, we go, no, we don't want to hear from him anymore. And they can all go, you get lost. We know, but there's that fluid ability to control the representation. And so I think a good point person like Mr. Obama would be great to have. But any focal personality could play the role of bringing eyeballs to the resource. I'm going to stop there. We had a second.
So thank you for the presentation here. And thank you for bringing back something I haven't heard in a long time, and you modified it a little bit to Mac, which is each one, teach one.
Yes.
That's not global. It's right here, right now.
Yes.
Second point, what would you say to Martin about having a father who was a minister? What would that be conversation like?
He had a father who was a minister.
Yeah.
His grandfather was a minister. He believed his great-grandfather the minister. What did I say to Martin about being the son of a minister? A little bit. You know, it's like, I had no chance. I couldn't be bad. I didn't even know what bad meant. I walked down the street and the hip guys would just shut up. I walked by and go, what? And they would go, not for you. I could have been the PK bad, true, which is kind of like reactive. I was not so much reactive, but I never had a shot. I say to myself, I had no chance. But then follow through. You just do it. Be you. Got to do you, as they say.
Yeah, I would just like to mention that I am one of probably 3/4 of the women in this room who will be marching on the 21st of January. It has...
And that's big deal.
It has not been mentioned in any of this carrying forth a message. I have not been approached as the great-great-granddaughter of a rabbi.
Oh.
Who was not destroyed in Germany in 1830. And I wish that a structure that has been produced and implemented with ease to create this march would be regarded as a platform for something important. And I haven't heard that yet.
Okay. Thank you for that reminder.
Speaking of the march, there was a revolution that did take place 50 years ago. There was a Summer of Love. In today's San Francisco Chronicle, on the front page, is that before the Summer of Love, there was an event 50 years ago and one day. Yeah, that's what this chronicle is about. Yesterday, 50 years ago, was the Human Bee in Golden Gate Park that kind of started it all. So it happened then, it could happen again.
Started it all. Now, the Summer of Love, yes, was... Okay.
No, I don't mean summer... No, the 60s. Okay.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah. It started the hippies.
Yeah. Very important. And I think that what that brings for me is a interesting cultural panel that I wasn't looking through. Because my cultural panel comes from late 50s, early 60s in the South. But I recognize, as Martin does, that this circumstance we find ourselves in is not racial and ethnic. We're just talking about simple garden variety abuse of power. In particular, the abuse of a power by the few, the power being the power of the many. Big problem. Doesn't matter. All other features are not relevant. A handful are abusing our world, our resources, our people. And so I believe that if I had to nail down myself down and say what it is, it's a class issue. And that class includes and crosses all ethnicities and racial lines, because if you are not in the right class, you're in deep trouble. And the world grinds you up. And we need to fix that. The path, when you enter the world, your path should, just by our choice and we believe is right, should give you the opportunity truly to participate in that famous line, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if you can't do that, it's broken. And I don't think we're there. But thank you for that remark.
I'd like to speak to exactly that question. When I look around this room, I see a whole bunch of people with a lot of education, and with education comes imagination, I kind of think. Mm. And then I'm thinking of all the people that don't get to go to school or go to schools in crappy educational systems in communities that aren't willing, I mean, this is fundamental, that aren't willing to pay the money to have a good education system. And I just, it just feels to me like that is a really important place that we haven't gone yet.
Yes. All right. So, I believe, quickly, I'll be quick. Thank you. I believe that we are technically at the place where we can truly say education on demand is possible. So I think we need good models. We need to actually provide, for those who want to do this, some guidance on how to make effective instructional content. And I mean not 1950s pedantic, but what they call edutainment. The idea is that if we don't create a lot of dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, if we don't create all those in the process, we're not going to stay with it. So it's the emotional grip of the products. But we can teach with the sweetener and deliver it anywhere, anytime. So it's on-demand education is the opportunity that I think we are under-providing, but it won't take us long, I think, if we can make a movement around that, that there will be no excuse to not be educated. Then it becomes, are we educating in the right things? And do we connect that education to a context where one can go, I know why I'm doing this, because in my area, this economy looks this way, and I see myself fitting in here. We kind of have to make the GPS system of education to gainful employment, and then you have people whose lives have dignity. Then we've now addressed crime in the proper way, and we can take people, again, back to the Maslow thing, beyond just surviving to these special things that so many of you know about that other people will never know about. There's things up there in the spiritual spaces, in the cultural, developmental space, in the artistic. There's all kinds of stuff. So we can't rise like that without this. So Mac, I think we're there. I think a movement would be good then. And the church might want to do that. Anything that needs collective activity right now, I'm kind of throwing it at the church. Do it. Do it, y'all. And so, me and Larry, we're gonna really provide for a 21st century church. And it's technical. And loving. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cordell.
Remember, overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe that we shall overcome. Someday, I believe you.
Yeah.